After several days in the city, Pinkerton finally secured a meeting with the president at 8 in the evening of May 2nd. Even at that late hour, he found the executive mansion still in a state of activity and bustle, he wrote later, with messengers running in and out of the building's entrance. Clusters of army officers huddled in serious conversations in the East Room on the first floor, and visitors lined up on staircases and along corridors to meet the new president and plead for a job in the administration. A doorkeeper took him up the steps to the second floor's south front, where Lincoln had summoned Seward to be with him in his office to hear out "our Chicago detective," as he told the Secretary of State. Navy Secretary Gideon Welles thought Lincoln, though well-intentioned, was in over his head when it came to dealing with schemers and subterfuge. That quickly became not the case. Lincoln could be ruthless when he felt he had to be. Within months, he would make clear to Congress that he considered prosecution of the war the chief executive's primary function, to be carried out with little meddling from the other branches of government and without allowing respect for civil liberties to interfere with national safety. The Constitution, in time of war, would restrain Congress more than it did Lincoln, who believed he had residual, even implied, powers to take any action he believed necessary to preserve the Union. Soon the president would suspend the writ of habeas corpus, allow the arbitrary arrest and jailing of thousands, shutter newspapers considered hostile to war aims, and even purge officials in Washington city government deemed disloyal. Across the country, he was prepared to disband popularly elected legislatures by force of arms if they tried to vote for secession. Lincoln found subversion and propaganda useful tools to undermine the border states that had joined the Confederacy and to keep the ones that remained with the Union under his control. In Confederate Tennessee's eastern region, where rebels were terrorizing and jailing pro-Union men, Lincoln in the summer would approve a fifth column movement of federal loyalists in the region, secretly funded with $2,500 from Washington, to launch guerrilla attacks, burning bridges and severing rail lines connecting Memphis and Nashville with Richmond. The plan eventually failed, but it did not dull Lincoln's willingness to launch fifth column movements. In the critically important Union state of Kentucky, Lincoln could not use the hardball tactics he'd employed in Tennessee. He launched instead a propaganda campaign to woo the state, at the same time covertly arming pro-Unionists there, and had informants report regularly to him on whether the tactics were working.